Hunter's heart was on fire. It burned as hotly in his chest as did the blaze causing the red glow in the sky to his left as he rode cross-country in the direction of the main trail to Tigerville. He tried to prepare himself for the burning of the 4BOXB headquarters. He'd known there was nothing he could do to stop the Tigerville men from burning it. There'd be too many of them, and they would have come expecting a fight. As much as he'd wanted to try to hold them off, he'd forced himself to face facts. He was only one man, after all. He couldn't do Angus or Annabelle any good dead. He couldn't exact revenge for his dead brothers and wounded father if he was dead. Still, seeing that pulsating glow in the sky off his left shoulder now, roughly a mile and a half away, his heart burned and his blood boiled in his veins. Hatred and rage seethed inside him, more strongly and more poisonous than it ever had during the war. Somehow, the war hadn't felt personal. This, however, was personal. Very personal indeed. He sucked back his rage, his fury, knowing he had to keep it down where he could control it, so he could think clearly and use it to his best advantage. He intended to cut the Marauders off on their way back to Tigerville, when their defenses would be down. He knew a shortcut that meandered around through the bluffs east of the headquarters and then followed a dry wash north toward a spot where the main trail on which the Tigerville men were riding cut sharply south, toward him.
Hey. Hey, Pee-wee. Well, we're gonna go back and look for that Buchanan. He killed my cousin Earl, and that means he bought and paid for a bullet from me.
Pee-wee looked over to see Leo Turner riding abreast with two other men behind him, hoisting one of the crocs they'd found in the Buchanan house before they burned it.
We're gonna sober up in town tonight, and then we're gonna ride out on fresh horses tomorrow and track him from the ranch. Him, that old rebel devil of a father, and that Ludlow girl who thought she was too good for my poor dead brother Luke. Dead on account of her.
Pee-wee lifted the bottle he was carrying in his left hand and tipped it back. Only a single drop dribbled onto his tongue.
Oh, crap!
He threw the bottle down hard against a rock beside the trail.
Leo, get up here with that jug! I'm out of whiskey!
Leo booted his horse up close beside Pee-wee's mount on Pee-wee's left side.
All that old mutt might be useless in most ways, but he does make good ale. I'm gonna miss his ale. But I'm through killing both him and his boy real slow. Once that's done, I'm gonna drag Ludlow's ripe and sassy daughter out of the brush. And I'm gonna make her moan like a 10-cent whore.
Pee-wee hoisted the jug high and threw back a big drink of the dark, malty Scottish ale.
When I'm done giving it to her, she's probably gonna want to marry up with this Cheney anyway. Maybe her and me, Ludlow's high and mighty woman, will marry up and move to San Francisco or some such.
Pee-wee raised the jug again. He frowned as the thick, tepid brew washed over his tongue. He'd spied movement out of the corner of his right eye. It was a pale, ghost-like figure moving fast, dropping down from a high point above him and onto the trail before him. His heart quickened. He just started to lower the croc before his horse jerked with a start, and then something unforgivingly hard and fast-moving slammed into the croc. The big jug was smashed savagely against Pee-wee's face, his mouth taking the brunt of the blow, pulverizing every tooth in the front of his jaws. He hit the trail hard on his belly, spitting teeth and croc shards from between his bloody lips. Lifting his head from the blood-muddy dirt, Pee-wee saw who he thought was Leo riding on the trail to his left, just as Leo's horse, a large dark bulk in the darkness, ran buck-kicking forward. When the chaos stopped, Pee-wee found himself lying belly down on the trail, his face in the dirt, arms drawn up over his head. His bloody mouth was on fire. He wasn't sure if he'd taken a bullet from the attacker's rifle. If he hadn't been hit, he was sure the situation would change in a second. He lay there, feeling more bits of tooth and croc jug slither out of his mouth on a continuous stream of blood. Suddenly, a foot was thrust against his left side. A bare foot? He was kicked onto his back. He lay staring up at a pale face hovering over him. Pee-wee held his crossed arms in front of his face, as though they could shield him from a bullet. Moon and starlight glinted off the barrel of a rifle. The end of the barrel was shoved into Pee-wee's mouth, between his raw, bloody lips. Pee-wee stared up in horror at a shadowy, gray-hatted head and two eyes blazing down at him from the side of the rifle. White teeth shone as the shooter stretched his lips back from his teeth.
I ain't gonna kill you, Pee-wee. Not yet. It's too damn easy. But soon, Pee-wee. Soon.
Nearly an hour later, Hunter rode up the final ridge through the trees and saw the small flickering orange fire that Annabelle had kept burning against the night's chill.
Who's there? Name yourself.
It's me, honey.
Hunter kept Nasty Pete moving up the steep incline. Anna stepped out of the darkness to the left of the cave and into the small sphere of flickering light encircling the fire. She leaned the rifle against the cave wall, then strode down to where Hunter stopped Nasty Pete near where Anna's buckskin was tied and wildly switching its tail. Happy to have Nasty Pete back, Hunter reckoned, as nasty as Pete was.
Thank God. I heard the shooting.
Hunter swung down from the Gruyo's back. She gazed up at him, her eyes wide with concern.
Are you all right?
Hunter nodded, wrapped his arms around her, and hugged her tightly against him. She hugged him back. She lowered her gaze to his feet, and then smiled up at him.
My barefoot warrior.
Hunter looked down at his feet.
I reckon I forgot to put my boots back on.
You're as wild as an Indian.
Wilder.
Hunter, it's Angus. Come up and take a look.
Hunter's heart thudded. He grabbed his boots and socks out of his saddlebags and followed Anna up the slope past the fire and into the cave. Angus lay at the edge of the firelight under the skins and blankets. A kettle of water in which a red rag floated lay nearby. Angus lay on his back, another damp rag resting across his forehead. The blankets quivered as Angus shivered beneath them, his eyes twitching. His forehead glistened with sweat.
Fever.
Anna and Hunter dropped to a knee beside the old man.
I've been trying to get it down all night.
Paul?
Hunter rested the back of his hand against Angus's left cheek.
He's burning up.
I know. I'm worried.
Has he been conscious at all tonight?
He's in and out. When he's awake, he talks gibberish. A few times he called me Amelia.
Ma.
He was telling me how sorry he was that he was off in the war when she died. He said he should have been home.
Hunter rolled onto his butt and began pulling his right sock onto his foot.
I'm gonna fetch Dahl.
Hunter, you can't ride to town.
I don't know what else to do, Anna. I'm not gonna just sit here and watch Paul die. I have to do something.
Your riding into Tigerville and getting yourself shot isn't gonna do Angus any good.
He pulled on his left boot, then his right one.
If I don't fetch the doc...
Amelia, honey...
Hunter whipped his head around, as did Anna. Angus's eyes were wide open and bright with anxiety. He slid his gaze from Annabelle to Hunter.
Oh, Shep, it's you.
No, Paul. It's Hunter, Paul. Do you know where you are?
Angus stared up at him, his cheeks flushed with fever.
No. No. Hunter's off fighting a war. A real rebel devil, I hear, too. Shep, fetch your ma for me, boy. Hurry along now. I got something I have to tell her.
Hunter glanced at Annabelle kneeling beside him.
It's okay, Paul. You don't need to tell her. She knows. She forgives you, Paul.
Oh, Amelia, I'm so sorry I wasn't here for you.
He squeezed his eyes closed, his head jerking. Slowly, he rested his head back against the pillows.
He's deep in fever, Anna. If I don't fetch the doc, he'll die. He might die anyway, but I have to do something or I'll never be able to live with myself.
Anna dabbed at the old man's forehead and turned her worried eyes to Hunter, nodding.
I know.
I'll reach town before light. No one will see me. I'll have Dahl back here pronto.
Keeping his head down, Hunter strode up the stairs that ran along the office building's right side. There was no answer, so he tried the doorknob. He swung the door open and poked his head into the doctor's office, outfitted with a desk and several glass cabinets, as well as a bookshelf spilling books and papers. There was a heavy medicinal odor. The desk was a mess, littered with papers, thick reference books, and an array of medical utensils and stoppered bottles, as well as trays of bloody water.
Would you sit still, please?
Duck Doll?
The saddled horse outside must have been Chaney's, though Hunter hadn't recognized it in the darkness on the trail. He went in and closed the door behind him. He walked around behind the desk to the door behind which Doll was tending Chaney. He leaned the Henry against the wall to his right and unsnapped the keeper thong from over the hammer of his holstered lamat.
Duck Doll!
Hunter slid the lamat out of the holster.
What the hell is that? Can't you hear me attending another man in here?
Big trouble, Doc. Better come quick.
Doll stared out through the 4-foot gap between the frame and the door. Hunter thrust the barrel of the big lamat against Doll's soft belly.
What the hell is...
With his left hand, he grabbed a flap of Doll's shabby, age-silvered, blood-stained, food-encrusted vest and drew the man brusquely into the office. Doll stared up at Hunter, who stood a good head taller, nearly twice as broad. The doctor's face flushed with anxiety, and his lower jaw loosened.
Sorry about this, Doc, but I myself have more pressing business than that hog walloper in yonder.
You're...
Hunter Buchanan.
Holy Jesus.
Doc glanced at the closed door.
What are you doing in town? That man in there...
is likely missing a few teeth, I know.
He has a busted jaw and a busted nose to boot. Possibly a fractured skull.
There'll be more where he came from. Some in a whole lot worse shape, I'd imagine. Chaney burned my ranch. He was there when my brothers were killed from bushwhack. I'm here to take you out to where I got my paw holed up. He's been shot, and he's out of his head with fever.
Del pulled his head back in astonishment.
I can't just leave that man...
Hunter shoved the lamat harder against the sawbone's belly.
Yes, you can, and you will. Or I'll feed you a pill you can't digest.
He dipped his chin to send those words home in a neatly wrapped, menacing package. He wasn't sure he'd really shoot the man just standing innocently before him, but he didn't want Doll to doubt it a bit. The sawbones appeared to buy it. The muscles in his pasty face sagged, and a red flush rose in his jowls.
What am I supposed to do about him? I can't just leave him, not like that. I'm so...
You're gonna leave him just like that, Doc. It's better than what he deserves.
Hunter pulled the lamat out of Doll's belly and waved it at the room.
Quick now, gather up what you need. We got a split tail out of here fast. My paw is burning up with fever.
Doll glanced at the door again.
Doc! Where'd you go, Doc?
Doll stared up at Hunter, deeply conflicted.
Forget him, Doc. Get your stuff together, now.
Standing on the balcony outside his second-story room in the Territorial Hotel, Sheriff Frank Stillwell tensed, grabbed the balcony's wooden rail, and crouched defensively. A long nine smoldering between his lips, Stillwell stared over the top of the rail through a break between two buildings directly across the street.
I'll be damned.
What's that, honey?
Stillwell blinked against the smoke curling up over his nose to pepper his eyes.
I'll be damned.
What is that all about, honey? You get the notion to take me out to breakfast? Treat me like a lady for a change?
Stillwell's heart chugged. Blood surged in his veins. He swung around and walked through the open French door into his suite of rooms. A large canopied bed lay before him. A girl lay on the bed, barely concealed by a thin white sheet. Jane Campbell worked here in the Dakota Territorial. She prided herself on being a saloon girl and dancer, distinct from a whore. Still, she was Stillwell's favorite whore. She was young and pretty, and she sported nearly a full set of teeth. She wore some scrapes and bruises on occasion, but there wasn't a saloon girl, dancer in Tigerville or anywhere in the Black Hills who didn't wear the usual scars of the trade. Best of all, Stillwell liked how she treated him. She was special in that way, Jane was. She was known for the finer arts. That was why Stillwell had started courting her. What Stillwell liked nearly as much as how Jane treated him in her own talented way was how easily he forgot about her after he'd set his hat on his head and left, knowing that the girl herself would be gone within the hour, making her way back to her own crib-like room at the end of the second floor hall, where she'd sleep and while away the hours until it was time to head downstairs to work. Knowing that he wouldn't see her again until he felt the burning need for a woman, and he sent a boy to fetch her. Another thing he liked about her, her red hair was nearly the same texture and shade as Annabelle Ludlow's. That was all that Jane had in common with Annabelle, but when you mixed in some whiskey-fueled imagination, it was often almost enough.
Frank, you're grinning like the cat that ate the canary.
I just saw something, or someone, I never expected to see in this town again. Leastways, I think it was him.
Frowning, dressed in only his Balbriggans and a plaid robe and socks, Stillwell glanced over his shoulder.
Sure enough, had to be. Big fella with the long blonde hair tumbling down from a Confederate gray hat. Sure enough, that was Hunter Buchanan, leading the doc out of town. Now, I recognized Dahl for sure, the little guy with his black medical kit. Buchanan likely fetched him to tend old Angus.
Jane sat up in bed and widened her eyes, letting the sheet drop low.
Hunter Buchanan?
That's what I said.
Stillwell shrugged quickly out of his robe and reached for his whipcord trousers draped over a chair arm.
You best be careful, Frank.
She drew the sheet up to cover herself.
If that really was Hunter Buchanan like you think it was, he might have come back to town to finish what he started.
Stillwell pulled up his pants, then froze. He lifted his head to frown over at Jane, leaning back against the bed's brass frame, her red hair hanging in mussed and tangled tresses to her pale, slender shoulders.
What are you talking about, finish what he started?
Stillwell's eyes darkened and drew together a little, the old, gnawing anger returning.
Finish what?
What?
Finish what, Jane, dear heart? What did Hunter start and didn't finish?
Jane stared at Stillwell, standing there about 6 feet beyond the foot of the bed, facing her, his pants pulled up, suspenders hanging down against each leg. Jane frowned. Then humor sparked in her pale blue eyes, and her plump cheeks flushed.
Well, you know, the other day.
Her smile stiffened before disappearing altogether. She turned her head slightly and curled a lock of hair around her right index finger.
No. I'm unclear as to your meaning, Jane. What do you mean about the other day?
Jane flinched. The flush in her cheeks turned a deeper shade of rose. Another smile, even stiffer than the last, tugged at the corners of her ripe, full mouth.
But you know, Frank, why do you want me to say it? You know, the way he ran into your office and how you ran out the back. You know, I'm not saying anyone else in your place wouldn't have done the same thing. I just mean... Frank, please don't come over here now, honey. Oh, you know how I hate it when you get that look in your eye? Oh, please, Frank, get back. No, oh, stop! Stop!
Hunter pulled Nasty Pete up to the edge of the creek, then loosened the reins to let the horse drink. Pete was tired. Hunter could feel the weariness and the tightness of the muscles beneath the saddle. He hated pushing a horse as hard as he'd pushed Pete the past several hours, stretching from last night into today with damn few breaks, but he had no other choice. If any horse could take the wear and tear, however, that horse was Pete. Bobby Lee took a long drink as well and flopped down in the shade of a sprawling box elder, tongue drooping over his narrow jaw, bright eyes narrowed. Hunter glanced over his shoulder. Dahl was riding up on the ewe-necked sorrel. Hunter wasn't sure which one looked the worse for wear, the sorrel or Dahl. The doctor had opened his collar, for the day was heating up. Sweat basted his shirt and shabby wool vest to his torso and against his sides, under his arms. The doctor's face was as pink as a doxy's rouge, and sweat dribbled down his cheeks and soaked his scraggly light red mustache and goatee. His spectacles sat crooked on his nose. Sweat speckled the dusty lenses.
Lord.
Dahl threw his right leg over the sorrel's rump. He dropped abruptly to the ground and stumbled backward, nearly falling. When he regained his balance, he lifted each foot in turn, placing his fists on his hips and turning this way and that, stretching.
I am not cut out for this kind of abuse.
You've got it easy, Doc.
Do I?
The sawbones glared up at Hunter.
I'm the one having to doctor the men you send back to town half alive.
Too damn bad. Luke Cheney and Stillwell started this whole damn thing.
You can end it.
I'll end it, all right. I'll end it when every last man who ambushed my father and brothers is dead. I saw most of them up close. I know who they are. I won't rest till they're dead. Till the men who sent them are dead.
Eventually, you're gonna have to play out all your aces, Buchanan. Could be today, could be tomorrow.
Maybe.
Dahl walked over to the edge of the creek. He dropped to his knees, looked at Hunter over his shoulder.
Why don't you just leave? Take your father and go. Go to Wyoming. Hell, go up to Montana. I hear there's still plenty of unclaimed range up there. Beautiful country. Green grass, stirrup high, and plenty of wild horses along the Missouri River breaks.
I've got a nasty habit of facing my troubles square on.
Dahl dipped his hand in the stream, cupping water to his mouth, drinking.
Isn't that just so damn noble? You'll die. Your father will die. She'll die.
It might not be official, but Annabelle's a Buchanan now. Buchanans stand together. If it comes to that, we'll die together.
If Stillwell himself doesn't run you down, her father's men will. Her siding with you, a grayback who killed Ludlow's business partner's son and wreaked holy hell across these hills. If Stillwell doesn't run you down himself, he'll bring in U.S. Marshals. Hell, maybe the cavalry from Fort Meade.
Stillwell? Hell, Stillwell's likely in Galveston or New Orleans by now. With my 30,000 in gold dust. He thinks I'm dead, both me and Annabelle. Dead in the mine he caved in on top of us.
What are you talking about? Stillwell's still in Tigerville. I just saw him last night. He's brought in more men from Bismarck. Killers.
The doctor's gaze drifted beyond Hunter, and he narrowed his eyes.
In fact, I think that he might be headed this way right now.
Hunter whipped his head around. Six or seven riders were heading toward them. The men were riding single file around the base of a finger of high ground sloping into the grassy valley. They were maybe 200 yards away, holding their reins high against their chests. Their backs and shoulders were set with rigid determination. As Hunter stared at the pack, the lead rider suddenly threw an arm up and forward, pointing.
Get him!
Go, darn it!
Hunter leapt out of his saddle.
Get back in the hurricane deck, Doc!
Hunter grabbed Dahl by the scruff of his neck and the waistband of his broadcloth trousers and hurled him up onto the sorrel's back.
Good Christ, what in the hell are you—
You head straight across this creek, Doc. Then up and over the next ridge. In the next valley, you'll find an old horse trail. Take it southwest, following the valley floor. After a couple hundred yards, you'll see a cave on the slope to your left. That's where Pa and Annabelle are. She'll likely hail you.
Hunter swung up onto Nasty Pete's back.
What are you gonna do?
I'm gonna lead them away from the cave. And kill him! Gah!
The old horse lunged off its rear hooves, nearly throwing its rider, who hung down the side for several perilous seconds before regaining his seat on the saddle. Dahl glanced anxiously back over his shoulder.
Keep going, Doc! Get the hell out of here!
Hunter swung Pete around and booted him back through the spare fringe of brush and aspens lining the creek. At the edge of the trees, he saw the riders closing on him now, leaning low over their horses' buffeting manes. Hunter swung Pete hard left, put his heels to the tired stallion, who gamely churned up the ground as he headed straight west toward a pine-clad slope. Hunter followed the coyote, swinging Nasty Pete out into the open, where his pursuers couldn't help but see him and give chase, ignoring the doctor, who was likely now heading up the southern mountain. All Hunter could think about was keeping those men away from the cave, about leading them up into the high country and killing each and every one, starting with Stillwell. He glanced over his shoulder. Had the doctor been right? Was Stillwell still around? He must have had the gold. Why hadn't he lit out with it? Apparently, his pride had been so battered in town the other day when he'd leapt out his office's back window that after learning that Hunter and Annabelle had survived the cave-in, he decided to stay and finish the job he'd started. Hunter thought the lead rider was likely Stillwell himself. The man in the dark brown Stetson crouched low over his Kleebank's pole, holding his reins up close to his throat in one hand, a Winchester in the other. The Kleebank was gradually closing the gap between it and Hunter's weary Groyot. Another glance over his shoulder told him that Stillwell was still closing on him quickly. Several other men behind him were branching off and appeared to be heading around the base of the incline, apparently intending to cut Hunter off on the other side of the mountain. If Pete had been fresh, he'd be able to keep climbing into the large boulders and towering ponderosas that Hunter knew capped the very crest of this ridge, which was called Black Mountain, a favorite hunting spot of his. But Pete just didn't have any more fuel in the firebox. As he crested a shoulder of the ridge, Hunter put Pete straight out across it. There was little cover here atop this grassy flat. Hunter had to get down into the gorge on the other side, where he'd at least have a chance. There was cover there, trees and rocks. Maybe a foot, he could gain the high ground against his pursuers and lay into them with Shep's Henry. The lip of the gorge appeared dead ahead. Pete's front legs folded. The bronc hit the ground on its knees, maybe 20 feet from the chasm yawning below. As it started to roll, Hunter kicked himself free of the stirrups and flew forward to hit the ground on his right arm and shoulder, feeling the Henry kicked out of his hand by one of the bronc's flying hooves. Hunter rolled and rolled, flinging his arms out, trying to stop himself before he went over the lip of the gorge.
No!
For two or three mind-numbing seconds, he was weightless. The world became a chalky, gray, and fawn-colored blur with a glint of sunlight reflected off tea-colored water. Water?
Oh!
As if to answer the question, he hit the stream with a cold plunge. Lying belly down in the water, he shoved up on his hands and knees, his long hair hanging in dark wet bands over his face. He whipped his head up, and his thudding heart jounced. Four men were moving toward him along the stream's left bank, which was nearly even with the floor of the narrow gorge. Its right side was banked by the steeply looming ridge down which he now saw Stillwell leading his horse, following a cautious slanting course, both horse and man taking mincing steps. Hunter jerked his head back to his right to see riders heading into the stream, straight toward him.
That grayback son of a mule, Skinner!
Hunter automatically slapped his holster, but of course the Lamath wasn't there. He dropped it on the ridge. Hot dread pooled in his belly when he looked up to see the horses stepping around him, circling him. Two more men rode toward him from behind the others, and their brush-scarred leggings and billowy neckerchiefs, they had the look of local tough nuts. So did one of the four men circling Hunter now, moving in close. But three of the others weren't merely local troubleshooters. They had the cold, dark eyes and grim mouths of professional, wide-ranging cold steel artists. Their guns attested to this as well, the number of them and the way they were positioned on hips or thighs, in oiled holsters for quick draws. These three wore large knives as well. The biggest man appeared the leader of these three. He had blonde, curly yellow hair oozing out of a shabby black plainsman hat, and mutton chop whiskers of the same color framed his long, ugly, amber-eyed face. He fit the description of the notorious regulator, Dakota Jack Patterson. That meant the other two hardtails were likely Patterson's partners, Weed Zorn, small and poison mean, and Klaus Steinbeck, a tall, slender, black-bearded man with flat cobalt blue eyes dressed in a long black duster and high black boots. He wore two big pistols on his hips and held a Winchester Yellow Boy across his saddle bows. Slowly, Hunter climbed to his feet, his soaked clothes hanging heavily on him. He stood crouched slightly, holding his hands away from his sides. They had him boxed in, trapped, but he wasn't a man who'd give up until he'd exhaled his last breath. He looked at the guns glinting in the sunlight around him, bristling on the four men surrounding him, and felt a palpable urge to get his hands on one of those hog legs. The blonde man sat facing Hunter straight on from the back of a steel dust stallion. Dakota Jack spread his thick lips in a grin. He raised his own Henry repeating rifle one-handed. The others were also aiming their rifles at him, staring at him darkly, a cold delight in their eyes, like wolves that had run down their quarry and were eager for its blood.
Hold on, Jack!
Stillwell was near the bottom of the ridge, leading his horse by its bridle reins.
Hold on! Hold on now, Jack!
Jack was said to be like a shadow in the night, but here he was in broad daylight, grinning with bald menace now at Hunter as he aimed that deadly Henry one-handed, gloved thumb resting on the cocked hammer. Stillwell had found a relatively gentle incline on the grade, and now he led the horse down off the incline and into the stream, the clay bank sagging back on its rear legs and loosing sand and gravel in its wake. Once in the stream, Stillwell climbed up onto the clay's back. Dakota Jack glanced behind him at Stillwell.
You want the honors, I suppose, eh, Frank? Suppose you deserve it.
Hunter was vaguely aware of something dropping down over his head. He looked down, just as the loop of a lariat was drawing closed around his chest. Panicking, he thrust his arms up and out of the noose, but before he could then grab the noose with both hands to thrust it off of him, someone behind him drew it painfully taut against his upper torso, just beneath his shoulders. It ground against him, a burning, grinding misery.
Let's go, Mort! Time to give this damn rebel a Dutch ride over rough rocks!
Hunter raged as he was pulled savagely straight back off his feet. His hands were free, so he was able to somewhat cushion his fall back into the water. But the slack was quickly taken out of the lariat with a jerk, and he found himself being pulled violently through the water, head forward. Kicking his legs, Hunter twisted around, turning belly down in the water, keeping his head raised above its surface. Stillwell spurred the clay bank up the stream bank and onto dry land, pulling Hunter along behind him. Hunter reached up and grabbed the taut rope before him, trying to ease the pressure under his arms. Meanwhile, sage clumps and rocks and stiff tufts of buckbrush came up to rake him mercilessly. A sudden plunge over a mound of gravelly ground ripped off his cartridge belt. His shirt sleeves were torn to ribbons. Blood oozed from dozens of scrapes and cuts. Pain-wracking bruises bit him deep. He felt as though he'd been hammered with tomahawks. Then, Bobby Lee shot out of the trees to Hunter's left and ran along beside Stillwell, leaping up as though to nip the sheriff's leg.
No, Bobby! Get away!
Stillwell palmed his pistol and fired at the coyote. Bobby Lee then turned and ran back into the trees.
You mule fritter! You better not have shot my coyote, you low-down dirty dog!
Hunter put his head down and endured another 20 or 30 raking, hammering yards. Suddenly, mercifully, he stopped moving. He let his head sag forward, knocked silly by the pummeling, choking on the dust that had been forced down his throat.
Hell, he's still in good shape. Let's have one more run, and then we'll head to town for the necktie party.
Horned toad?
Hunter lifted his head and shook his mud-caked hair from his eyes. His entire body was on fire with raking burns.
You ready, Grayback?
Hunter glared back at him. As he did, he saw a moss-stained rock poking up out of the ground about 10 feet ahead of him and slightly right. Blonde grass poked up around it. It appeared to be solidly set. Hunter shifted his gaze back to Stillwell, and despite the rusty railroad spikes of pain grinding into every bone socket, feeling as though three layers of skin had been scraped off of him, he somehow got his lips twisted into a smile.
Sure. Why the hell not? That all you got, Stillwell? You Nancy boy coward?
Hunter glanced at the other men astride their horses ahead of him.
You fellas should have heard how Stillwell screamed like a little girl with her pigtails on fire when I stormed into his office the other day.
Stillwell glared at Hunter over his left shoulder. A russet flush rose into his dusty cheeks. He slid his eyes toward the other men, then returned that flat, ominous gaze to Hunter. The sheriff tightened his jaws and whipped his head forward. Before Stillwell could comprehend what was happening, Hunter was running off to the right. Hunter's feet were heavy and numb, and his bones seemed to clatter together without benefit of cushioning cartilage.
Hi-yah!
Stillwell and the claybank barreled forward. Only a little slack on the rope remained. As the others all jerked up their rifles, Hunter dove over the rock. He hit the ground on the other side of it and quickly wrapped the fast-diminishing slack around three sides of the rock. The horse jerked sharply to its right, twisting its long neck to the left. Stillwell threw his left arm up and out like a rodeo rider. The horse dropped back onto its right hip and then onto its side and onto Stillwell's right leg. There was enough slack in the rope now that Hunter, gaining his knees, lifted it up and over his head and tossed it away. The other riders circled him. Hunter looked up. Dakota Jack was extending his Colt's revolving rifle straight down at Hunter, one-handed, his other gloved hand holding his reins.
You had your chance, Frank. Now it's my turn.
Jack closed his eyes suddenly. His head jerked so sharply to his left that his hat flew off. His torso sagged out over that side of his saddle. At the same time, his right hand opened, and the Colt's revolving rifle dropped to the ground, 6 feet away from Hunter. All the other men sitting their horses around Hunter stared at Dakota Jack in mute shock. As Jack dropped to the ground, the men around Hunter raised their rifles.
Ambush!
Hunter reached for Dakota Jack's blood-speckled rifle. It was just out of reach. He rose to hands and knees and crawled toward it. He finally reached the rifle and lifted it in both his rope-burned hands, raising it. But by then, the riders had fled. All but Stillwell. The sheriff had gained his feet and was hopping on his good leg, trying to climb into his saddle, and casting frantic, wide-eyed looks in the direction from which Dakota Jack's killer had fired. Hunter wanted desperately to dispatch Stillwell, but the dragging had cost him most of his strength. The rifle weighed a ton in his hands, and the ground was spinning around him so quickly that he was having trouble getting the rifle's hammer cocked back. Stillwell swung up into the leather and batted the heel of his good leg against the clay's flanks.
Next time, Buchanan!
Stillwell turned his head forward and galloped up and over a grassy rise. Hunter dropped to his butt.
I'll be here, Stillwell. I'll be here.
He turned his head to see a rider gallop out from behind a low, rocky scarp on the other side of the stream. Dark red hair bounced on slender shoulders, clad in a red and black checked shirt beneath a brown Stetson. Hunter watched Annabelle splash across the creek on her buckskin. She galloped toward him, concern in her eyes.
Hunter!
She checked the buckskin down to a skidding halt and leapt out of the saddle.
Oh, God.
She threw her arms around his neck.
Oh, you must have some Scott in you.
She pulled her head away from his and ran her horrified eyes across his torn clothes and bloody, dirty, grass-covered body.
How bad?
Looks worse than it feels. But then, I'm not sure I can feel all of it yet.
Is anything broken?
She ran her hands down his arms, down his legs.
Can you stand?
Not sure how that's possible, but I don't think anything's broken.
Hunter looked over to see Bobby Lee scurrying out of the trees, head and tail low. The coyote ran up to Hunter and placed his front paws on his master's knee.
I'm all right, Bobby. How are you? That moss back didn't...
Hunter found a bloody furrow across the top of the coyote's back.
You'll live. We'll both live to fight another day, Bobby. Next time we'll kill that son of a bitch. Just as soon as...
He turned to Annabelle and placed his dirty hand on her arm.
Pa, did Doc Dahl make it to the cave?
Just after he arrived and went to work on Angus, I heard the shooting. I threw a saddle on the buckskin and...
Annabelle just now noticed the dead man. Hunter heaved himself to his feet.
Meet Dakota Jack.
That's Dakota Jack?
She looked at Hunter.
The killer?
One and the same. You might have made yourself some money. I believe he has a hefty bounty on his head.
Annabelle's cheeks turned pale as she stared down in disgust at Dakota Jack Patterson, who lay twisted on his side, a hole in his head just behind his right ear. As it had taken its leave of the killer's head, the bullet had blown out a goodly portion of the man's left temple. Still, Dakota Jack appeared to be smiling as he stared up past Hunter and Annabelle through heavy-lidded eyes.
I didn't think I could hit him from that distance. I've only shot deer and antelope before.
Annabelle looked at Hunter.
Never a man. I think I might be sick.
The first one's always the hardest.
Hunter drew her against his side, squeezing her.
Don't look at him anymore. He'll just haunt your dreams, and he ain't worth it.
She turned to him.
We have to get you cleaned up. You might need stitches, and we can't be sure bones aren't broken. I'd be surprised if they weren't, the way that madman dragged you behind that horse.
Nah, all I need is a little bath in the creek. Then I'll be ready to ride.
As Annabelle tended to the horses, Hunter moved slowly up the steep grade to the cave. The doctor eyed him incredulously, raking his torn bloody clothes and the bruises on his face with his critical gaze.
Looks like you asked the wrong wildcat to dance.
Who says I did the asking? How is he, Doc?
Not good. Alive, but not good. Annabelle did a fair job of suturing the wound, but he was bleeding beneath the stitches.
Must have been the ride up here.
I drained the blood and infected fluid out of the wound and cauterized it. His fever is still high. It might go higher. If it does, he'll probably die.
Isn't there anything else you can do, Doc?
No.
Dahl straightened, shaking his head. He adjusted his round, dusty spectacles on his nose.
Not out here, anyway. Maybe not even if you got him to town. And you just need to keep bathing his face with cold water and pray, if you're so inclined. The rest is up to God and Angus, I'm afraid. It all depends on how tough he is, how badly he wants to live.
All right.
I guess you're the next Buchanan I better have a look at. God, my God, man. Gee.
I'm all right, Doc. Just scraped and beat up some.
Best hold up here for a while. Rest up. Both you and your father. I'll try to move him for a couple of days at least. Then don't move him far. It would be wise to get him to a clean cabinet, comfortable bed.
Dahl set his hat on his head.
I'll be going.
Doc?
What is it?
Someone must have seen us leave town together.
I gathered that. Stillwell's still alive?
He might be a problem for you.
Don't worry. Neither he nor anyone else will learn from me where you three are holed up. I won't be responsible for any more bloodshed.
They could get rough.
I'm the only doctor in town.
Hunter returned the smile with a wooden one of his own. He turned to peer into the cave. Angus lay beneath the skins atop the bed of spruce boughs. He looked small and frail and pasty. Hunter felt hollow inside. Cold.
If it's any consolation, most men in his condition, having suffered the kind of wound your father suffered, would be dead by now. Even much younger men. It amazes me he's still going, still fighting.
Not me.
Hunter turned to the doctor.
He hasn't gotten payback yet for Shep and Ty.